Good morning to all of you. First of all, I want to welcome you to NTU. We are very proud that to host this event with our friends from LEMS International. Professor James has been a great friend. And in fact, we are very, very happy that we are doing this in Singapore. We hope that this will be a beginning of a journey together in which we will promote the use of LEMS that will enhance learning. Okay, the topic of my talk will be back to the future. Okay, back to the future talks about time travel. And I'm going to apologize, first of all, that I will be taking longer than the time allocated. I hope you'll bear with me. All right, so being a time traveler, time is a bit elastic. So I'll be sharing with you some of the insights, some of the reflections, and some of the realities that we have experienced, so that those of you who are thinking about going to LEMS will at least be aware and will consider how things will be done. Okay, so let's the journey begin. Okay. The focus of my talk will be more on the operational aspects of how we do things at the enterprise, at the campus level. Now, a lot of examples that we'll be hearing in the next few sessions today, as well as some of the examples that James will be sharing with you, will focus on the practice of use of LEMS and how you can use it to enhance learning. So a lot of the examples that will be given are things that you can do at a course level, so they'll be very, very useful for our faculty members to use. So with that in mind, okay, I would just, let's say, the focus here will be at the campus institutional level. Excuse me. Okay. Now, the next few slides is material that I've taken from Gartner. All right. Why am I saying that? This part of the slides will not be part of the stack that will be available for download, because the material in there is copyrighted. You can get the material from the library, or you can use Google, right? Google will help you to find all the content which I have used over here. But to help us understand the big picture, okay, it's good to understand something called the Gartner chart, the Gartner hype chart, right? And if you want to know more about what this is all about, Wikipedia has a good article about how to interpret this chart. Essentially, the graph is something like an S shape, a Z shape, like Zorro. And what it does is that Gartner uses this chart to illustrate what are things which are emerging, what are things which are being adopted by enterprises, and what are things which are declining into the trough of this illusion. And all the things that have, after going through the decline, has then climbed up into the slope of enlightenment, and after that, to widespread adoption. Now, many technologies go through such a curve. Okay, so let me give you an example of how to interpret this graph and how Gartner is able to plot data points along the hype curve. So what they do is that they take a technology, for example, let's say tablet PCs. And what happens is that as they observe certain events, okay, they will then plot them according to the curve. Right, so for example, if it's just starting up, this is where it will be. When things have been adopted to a certain extent, they will be higher up in the curve. Okay, and later on, when there is some things like some failure, it will show decline. And later on, when there's a second generation product, it will then go up. Not all products or not all technologies survive the full curve. Some will die along the way. Others might continue on and out of the curve into wide adoption, right? So understanding this curve will give us a good perspective of what is coming, so it helps us in our planning and to be aware of emerging trends that might be useful for education. So let me flash back to what the Gartner curve that was given sometime in 2001. Now, for those of us who have been in e-learning in the early days, you'll be familiar with many of the events which are on the curve. For example, Starbucks was founded. Okay, Starbucks today is a big company based in the US focusing on e-learning. New York University Online was founded, and then it died somewhere here. All right, SCOM's 1.0 release, SCOM 1.2. So this is a good tool to understand the bigger picture. And once we understand the bigger picture, it helps us to plan ahead. Now, at the same time that Gartner was talking about the Hype Chart, they also came up with this concept of organizational efficiency in the context of a campus deployment. And what they mean by organizational efficiency is that in a campus environment, okay, the IT department will deploy and develop tools that will help in education, in research, and provide support as well as governance. And such tools will facilitate processes, infrastructure, as well as information services. And what is emerging? Okay, and based on Gartner's observation, is the rise of what we call personal productivity tools, which helps the individual student to learn better, as well as the professor to teach more effectively. And based on what they observe, there seems to be at this point in time a conflict between the two. A conflict in the sense that this is one domain that's been the focus of many computer centers on campus. And this is something that is emerging. And to many computer centers, they seem to clash, okay, because they feel that if they provide for one, they will not benefit the other. And so what Gartner has proposed is to look at how we can balance this. Okay, balancing the two. So instead of looking at it as a clash, look at it how it can be balanced so that when it is used correctly, it will enhance the efficiency of the university as well as improve the student learning and professor teaching. And what they came up with, instead of having two parallel tracks that crosses and clash, they show two axes. And based on this approach, they try to rationalize and see that if we were to identify what is the hotspot, where there's both maximum operational efficiency and personal productivity, this is what we can focus on. That will benefit both the university administration, management, the faculty, as well as the students. Of course, if you are strong in one or the other, you know, you will have advantages, okay, but there will serve the community in that regard, but might be at the cost or opportunity cost for the other axis. And of course, if all you have is something in here, frankly, it says don't bother. Right? So this is a good way to sort of strategize or prioritize your effort in promoting the use of technology. So in 2009, and this is the one that I want to talk about, once you got the background, Gartner came out with this hype cycle, and you will see in here quite a few areas had been identified as emerging that talks about social learning. Okay, for example, talk about the mobile learning smartphone, the device. It talks about virtual environment. It also talks about social networking in education and where it lies relative to the hype chart. Okay, and they added additional information. They color-coded the dots. By looking at the color of the dots, you have an idea of what is at the horizon and what may be further down 10 years, 5 years off the road. And also identify which are the ones that did not make it. Okay, for example, they talk about podcasting. Podcasting, to them, is something that is more or less dead. So anyone thinking of doing podcasting, think again. So it's e-learning repositories. Okay? Now, Gartner is not always correct, okay? But the probability of being correct has been quite high, about 8 out of 10, 80%. Right? So when you look into this chart, okay, based on this, it will help us to really strategize what are the things that the university should invest in, should explore, and should consider, or write off altogether. And the one that I want to focus on is this thing called social learning platform, okay? In which I regard LEMS as a good example, as an early example, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Okay, so taking those data points and plotting it into this optimization chart, you'll find that social learning platform is one of the hotspots we should consider, e-portfolio, lecture capture and retrieval, mobile learning platform, smartphones. Okay, FIMA is something on identity management over here, right? Something that should also be considered because today many campuses are becoming global, right? So students do cross-access resources for each other. What is something that you should consider letting go? These are ITIL, free cloud email, right, something that is in this cold spot. Right, and here it presents the most current chart from Gartner, 2011. And again, what you see is that the social learning platform has now gone up a bit more because, again, it is seeing a wider adoption. Social media, wikis, is all also seeing a rise in its adoption. So from these charts, Gartner was able to make certain observations, provide some insights here. And what are the insights? Okay, the color code refers to how people work. Working alone talks about personal productivity. Same place, same time, like what we're doing here today. Same place, same time, different place. This is about synchronous gatherings. People get like virtual classes. One person or many people, different places. And here we've got asynchronous, which talks about different time, different places. For example, like email is one good example. And what they note is that, or what they predict, is that by 2015, this mode of individuals working alone is going to decline, okay, from 40% to about 15%. Same thing with same time, same place kind of situations, the meeting in the classrooms. On the other hand, same time, different place kind of working will increase, right? And different place, different time will in fact see significant increase from 25% all the way to 55%. Okay, and what they observe is that the percentage of the individual time that depends on group inputs and actions is going to increase. All right, and by this, it talks about social interactions, social collaboration, and social learning. Okay, and the conclusion, therefore, is that teaming and collaborative situations will become more common in the years to come. Okay, now, if this is what they predict, and assuming they are right, what it means is that in a university environment, we should think about getting people to work together. Social learning rather than individual learning. Not that that's not important, because that still is part of their learning process. But in the real world, when they work, that's what's going to happen. Okay, and they say that by the year 2050, 80% of work outcomes will depend on inputs and cooperation of two or more people. The work will be seldom be done face-to-face. Right, and that is going to happen because of technologies. Okay, and this is the action item, that we should re-examine work and assignments with an eye towards collaboration rather than singular outputs. Right? Think about that. So that's the backdrop. Okay, so that's a big picture from what they see will happen globally. In some countries, of course, that will be happen earlier, some maybe later, but eventually, I think more and more social learning will take place. So I want to share with you how we started. Okay, I'm not going to say long, long time ago in China, because that's not true. Okay, but what happened was that in May 2000, NTU embarked on e-learning, and that happened when the planets came together. Okay, and they came together, and you could see actually those planets in the sky at the same area. Okay, and that was when e-learning started in NTU, and as many of you who are from NTU, we call it Adventure, right, to talk about it being part of our campus life. 2002, if you can recall, was the year of the World Cup in Korea and Japan. And that was also the year in which NTU, we talk about having a national repository of learning objects. Okay, those were early days where e-learning was just coming up. And the whole idea of having such a repository was that if we are able to collect learning objects, they can be reused and put it together with contribution from different people, institutions or individuals. All right, that would be something that would be useful for education. But we also recognized in those early days that having a learning object by itself is not enough. It was one track of the river line. We also needed something called the learning path. All right, and the idea there was that the learning path was composed of content that will be from the repository. And so this content can be then inserted into such a learning path. So a student will come in from where he is to where he wants to grow. Okay, and of course, the learning path will not be linear, but it can be alternative paths as well. Right? So depending on his proficiency, if he does successfully, he didn't do well, he will branch off and branch down and so on and so forth. So that at the end of the process, whether through the shortest path or through an extended path, he will reach the desired proficiency. Right? So we felt that for this NALO concept, okay, National Repository of Reusable Learning Objects to work, it must have a learning path. This was the part we could do. This was the part that we didn't know how to do. Okay, we meaning NTU. Right, and the concept extends that once you have such a repository in national level, it can cooperate with other sites elsewhere in the world, and there'll be international harvest points, meaning that if there's one in the US, in Tokyo, in Hong Kong, in Sydney, right, when the contributors put content in there, it can be combined together so that we have a global repository. And of course, for the content to be used, as well as combine the learning paths, it will go through a learning management system that will put things together and allow learners to come in and assess the content. This was the concept the vision that we had way back in 2002. And like I said, the learning path part was something that was missing. We didn't know how to do it until one day we met Lance. It was at the E-Agenda 204 meeting. I'm not sure if James remember. And we were talking about the concept of use, reuse, produce, and profuse. Right? You use content, you create them, it can be reused, it can be repurposed. Right? And after that, when you produce causes with lots of learning objects, you will profuse the use of learning objects. And when James talked about LAMS at the meeting, we thought that, hey, this is a good partnership. And this was where we became interested to develop our relationship with LAMS. Okay, so with this big background in mind, the question is, so where does that take us to? And I think this is one of the fun parts that we had in NTU, was when we see the bigger picture and different pieces, we can pick up from all the, from the basket of different technologies, and then see how we can merge them and make it operational or useful for our campus community. And this was when we also developed the Sigma model. And Sigma model came about when I was a visiting professor to Thailand. And something that one of the ladies shared about the experience caused me to think about the Sigma model. I'll talk a bit about that in a minute. Now, the background of the idea came about because we are aware that education is one industry that does not guarantee our products. Okay, let me explain. If I buy a chair, okay, this chair will have quality control to say that it is grade A. Grade A means that if I sit on it, it will not fall apart. It will hold me up. It will last a long time. Nobody will sell a grade C chair because they know that if they do that, they will lose the customers. So if you buy a car, you don't buy a car that is grade B, meaning that it starts the engine half the time, and the other time is in the garage. We only buy a grade A product. But in education, we accept and we graduate students who are grade A, grade B, even those who just passed. Okay, so when they graduate from the university, we say they graduated, but the grading is not consistent, unlike that of a product. We also are aware, and today there are very good studies to show that the effectiveness of e-learning and traditional face-to-face learning is about the same. Okay, in fact, some would argue that, and I believe, that as the maturity of the technology matures, e-learning will actually have better outcomes. Okay, and by that, what do I mean? So I have a simple chart to illustrate. It means that through use of technology in a relevant way, you will see more students will do better. Okay, so from here to there, and with better performance, right? So you have more students doing better. Those who are at the far end, who are the top students, okay, in fact, studies have shown that they perform even more. But at the end of the day, at a personal level, I'll be very, very happy if I can achieve the last one. Okay? It can reduce the failure rate. That in itself to me is actually the whole reason why we are pushing the use of technology. If you can reduce the failure rate, it means you save the life of the student. Okay, and you can do so through some of the things that we will talk about in a minute. Alan Kay also inspired us. He said that the best way to predict the future is to invent it. All right, in other words, instead of saying tomorrow it will rain, what you do is that you make sure it rains by maybe, you know, increasing the humidity of the air kind of thing. Or you seed the clouds, and the seeding of the clouds will cause rain. So you want to make something happen, you want to see something happen, make it happen. And based on his idea, we ask ourselves, the typical way we accept performance from our students is through the traditional bell curve, right? That lies somewhere in the middle. But consider, okay, and this is where I'd like to challenge all of us here. If we were to set a target instead and ask ourselves, okay, if this is the curve that we want, there's a bit of echo here. Is this the curve that we want? Can we start with the end in mind and then say to ourselves, to achieve that curve, what can we do? Now, that's the way, in fact, the real world manufacturing facilities operate. They say, this is the curve that we want. And then in the process, they say, look at products which are faulty or do not meet the QC. They find out what's the problem, solve the problem, and in the process, push the curve up here. And that process is what we call the Six Sigma. Right, where they try to come up with more and more products which are grade A with fewer and fewer rejects. Okay? So this is the question we ask ourselves. Instead of accepting the traditional bell curve, if I say that this is the new bell curve that you want for NTU or for your university, what can we do? This gentleman here, Tom Reeves, a friend of many of us, he was here in 2007. And in his presentation, he asked a question that caused some of my colleagues to drop their jaw. Okay, he asked the question, you have taught them, have they learned? And many of our faculty colleagues assume that because I've taught them, therefore they have learned. And we assume that because why? When we ask any questions, nobody put their hand. So they have learned. Right, but the bell curve tells us otherwise. To help us understand this better, Tom posed the question also in a different way. He said this, if you have taught them, okay, and no one learns, has he taught? Wow. That throws a different spin. In other words, he's telling you that the assumption that you have taught them equals to they have learned is not true. There will be situations where you have taught them and they have not learned. And I will tell you a personal example of my son. I said to him, why is it in the class of 25, he's in a school elsewhere, you know, everybody goes to the same lesson and you got to get 60% when friends can get 80%. You do go for the same class? Yep. Do you hear the same teacher? Yep. And then why is there that difference in grade? You know, and of course, there are many reasons to sort of understand why. All right? It could be that foundation is weak, or maybe he himself didn't put the effort, so on and so forth. But this is the assumption which I'd like you all to think about, to reflect on. And arising from those episodes, it calls us to look at quality. Quality is something that we are all familiar with. Maybe not fully understand. Okay? But I'd like to shed some light on how we see quality. Today we talk about quality. There are two dimensions of quality that we are very familiar with. One is quality of content. Okay, we call this e-quality. Right? E, small e, big Q, quality. And talk about quality of the content, how good it is. The pedagogy that goes into it. And today, usually content is not a big problem. Thanks to Google, the internet, textbooks, there is so much knowledge in the world that we can type and use. The other dimension is the quality of teaching. that is something that I think all faculty have to go through. In many campuses, there is what I call the feedback by students, teaching feedback. And this is the part that students ask the question, you have taught them, have I learned? Okay, and this is what standards you see variations in the scores. While these are the two most common qualities that we talk about, based on what I just said earlier, we think there is a third quality that I mentioned, which we should think about. And this is the quality of learning. Okay? Which I'm glad to say LAMS is trying to do it. I'm not sure intentionally or otherwise, but it's happening in the LAMS environment. And if there is the quality of learning, which actually is very dependent on the student, it will actually increase the student performance. Because if the student can learn, okay, can learn effectively, frankly, the dependency on teaching quality and content quality will be lessened. Right? We all know the saying that a good student will do well anyway, even if there is a lousy teacher. Right? Because the person will be self-motivated. So is there a way we can build into the process, the quality of learning, then we might be able to achieve that in a more structured and more predictable way? So that was the question that we were asking ourselves. And if the university can provide such a system within the learning environment, it will actually have good outcomes in that the students will perform better, will think better, will think more critically, and it will enhance the institutional reputation. And of course, in the 4 years that they're with us, we will be able to value add to their thinking, to their learning in a more effective way. And if we can achieve this part here, yes, they have learned. Okay, we'll be able to answer this question with a more definitive yes. And pondering more on this dimension of quality, I think when we are good in quality of content and quality of teaching, this is the kind of curve that we will have. Okay, but, okay, and this is where you can challenge me, okay? If we are able to enhance the quality of learning, that curve will be more likely. Right? Because the students can learn better, either by themselves or in the environment, this is the kind of curve that we'll see versus the traditional bell curve that is right back in the middle. Remember this guy? Bill Gates. Bill Gates was credited with making the statement, content is king. Okay, and John Chambers, head of Cisco, was not doing too well today. In fact, the two companies are not doing too well today. He said that if content is king, then infrastructure is God. Think about it. If you've got good content but you cannot deliver it, then frankly, the good content just remain in the server. I added a third phrase. Yeah, and this is what I said. Actually, my photographs were smaller because those two are giants. Okay, but I couldn't get a smaller picture, so there you are. I added that if content is king and infrastructure is God, learning activities will actually create the context or the experience. And if you're able to do this, it will actually make learning more relevant and more useful. Okay, and in that regard, it might require a change in the role of instructors as people who stand in front and deliver. They might be doing other things which will create this experience that we're talking about. And so for a start, what we did was to see how we can implement it across the whole campus. And we know from after 10 years in e-learning that any new tool you introduce is always challenging. Professors, they do not want to learn new tools, but they do not mind using new features of a tool. And so when we look into how we can deploy this across the whole campus, we look at how we can integrate what we have already. So, for example, we have lectures and recorded lectures. Forums are being used already. So also self-assessment. And now LAMS. And so what we try to do is to define what we call a practice module. Instead of saying that lecture is a learning module, and then tutorials is another learning activity, we combine them all into one practice module and say that in NTU, what we like professors to do is that when they combine these four together, then they have a practice module. If they do on its own, it is not complete, but I mean, if that's what they want to do, so be it. So we're trying to inculcate this practice where they combine this together. And like I said, these are things which they do already, but independently. What we do is to put them together. Right, so let me talk about what we are doing today. So I've talked about the big picture, the concepts or principles that we are looking at, and now what is actually happening. We have come a long way since we started about 10 years ago. Okay, and today we have many tools in there which are used, tools for different purposes. Okay, and because of time, we'll talk only about two, LAMPS and Presenter, which we have done. Other initiatives that we have talked about is learning space, mobile learning, wellness, things like that. Okay, and so what we see happening is that with the various concepts or domains which are available in there, what we're trying to do is to put them together and create what we call a social learning environment. Okay, and so in that regard, we have defined for ourselves that the theme that we adopt for the next maybe 2 years or so is the theme that learning is everywhere. All right, learning is not just the individual, but everywhere with other people. Right, and we're going to do it in a way that will have these attributes in our social learning environment. It will be participative, it will be collaborative, and very importantly, it will be sustainable. And this is the important part. Okay, many of us here are good in coming up with new ideas to do this and that, but challenging to find it sustainable. So when we roll out something or the campus deployment, we are still looking at this part here, will it sustain? Will it be something that happens after 2 semesters, and then after that, the professors get burned out? Okay, they wear the white flag, and that's the end. Right? So by theme, this is what I mean. Every 2 years or so, we reflect back, you know, and then we understand, probably understand what is happening. And so when we started in 2002, when we look back in 2002, when we look back, we said that what we have was efficient learning. Okay, then in 2004, we look back and say that in phase two, we were looking at how we can humanize e-learning, so and so forth. Right, and today, like I said, we are looking into social learning, mobile learning, as well as wellness. Right, so learning is everywhere in every dimension as well. Okay. So how do we deploy it? Here is where I give you some examples. Okay, I want to recognize Paul who helped us in this regard, and Paul is back with us. Welcome back, Paul. Yeah, and Paul was instrumental in getting this kicked off in NTU. We are looking into how we can implement blended learning. Blended learning is not new. The challenge has always been in what form do we implement it that will be meaningful and sustainable. And so in our model, of course, we think of transform, not transfer. Because many times we transfer one form of media to another before the transformation. And hence, after all the effort, the outcomes of learning, blended learning that we are hoping for, we do not actualize it. Okay, so transform means transformers. Okay, the movie is coming out soon, the next one. Yeah, it should be this week. Great. So the idea here is to look at an online lesson, okay, blended environment, that will be highly interactive, participative, and collaborative. Okay, so how can we do it? Right, so here's one example. Okay, to start off, we use tools which are there already. Right, we're using the lecture recording, using Blackboard as our gateway, and LAMPS. Now, teach less, learn more is something that all of us aspire to do. Now, many of you have heard of Hollywood, right? You have heard of Bollywood. In Nigeria, they call it Nollywood, okay? In NTU, we call it Uniwood, right? This is our lecture recording project, okay? We embarked on this, I think, since 2004. And since that time, we have created a good collection of content which can be delivered to different platforms and devices, and to help us to record it with some level of quality, we have put in every lecture theatre a prompter located at the best seat in the house. Best seat meaning that the angle is just right. Okay, we try to. Sometimes you can't get best seat, we use somewhere else, but this is ideal. The intention is that when the class is in session, the professor will be looking at the monitor, and if you observe carefully, next to the monitor is actually a camera. Right? So the idea is that as the professor looks at the prompter, he's facing the camera, and so he will capture a facial shot. Now, in other implementations, when the monitor is on the table, what happens is that when the picture is taken, you can count, you can see the bald headedness of the professor or how much white hair he has. Right? So we think professors look better than that. So we have adopted this arrangement. Right? And in the process that we wanted to do, we wanted to make sure that it's cheap, economical, it's fast, right? And it can be distributed very effectively. Remember what John Chambers said, infrastructure is God. Okay? And we adopted this approach, in fact, from a very early stage, because to us, this was the fast and effective way to create e-content. Now, many institutions, they use Flash. Okay, it's not wrong, it's good, it's interactive, but it's very costly, and it's very slow. All right? Lecture recording is fast. How fast? Within a year, based on 40 lecture theaters that we have, we can produce 41,000 products. Okay, that's how fast you can be at full capacity. Right? If you try producing 41,000 or 20,000 Flash content, it will take you a long, long time. Okay, so today, because of the track history that we have created a lot of content in NTU, and this is our repository. So remember, in our concept, repository, learning path, and collaborative learning. And the intent here is that once you've got the content of lectures, we can repurpose it, we can reformat it, do shorter segments, and then reuse it. Okay, and LAMS, many of you are familiar, it's integrated in Blackboard or in Adventure, so it's ready for use today. So give an example, course site, right? Things are embedded into the links in there. When a student click on the link, as you can see from here, you will see the familiar LAMS interface. Now, I want to encourage you that the LAMS sequence need not be very long to start off with, right? For those of you who are thinking of doing it, start off with a short link first. Get used to it, look at the results, and once you see results happening, and you will see good results, then you can talk about the more advanced features of LAMS. Okay. So this is an example, okay, of what it looks like. Are you still with me? I know it's tea break time, so bear with me, yeah? Right, so the idea here is that the student will click on the link when he goes to the learning path, will view the video, and after the video, he will look at the question, and then he will give an input. Now, when I give this presentation, or show this in a conference in Thailand, computer center director put her hand and said to me, Daniel, we evaluated this LAMS, and we think that they're for school kids. Primary school kids. And when I heard the question, I responded with another question. Have you actually used it? She said, no. We evaluated, and we stopped there. All right? But what we know, those of us who have been using it, is that the power of LAMS happens after you press the submit button. Before that, it is traditional. But once you press the submit button, what you have, okay, before that, I focus on this thing because I think Paul, I'm not sure whether it was by design or by accident, he put a picture of the professor in there. That's part of our humanizing e-learning part. Put the human being in all these things, otherwise students feel that they are learning from a web page. Put a picture. So in a lot of things that we do, we put the human beings, video, photograph, or things like that. And sorry, so back to what I was saying, if you press the LAMS, the submit button, LAMS becomes super LAMS. Because that is where the value happens, after the submit button is received. And this is what you can see. Right? One professor who was working with us, very unwillingly, and Paul will have stories to tell you, when he saw this respond by students, his jaw dropped. And he said, and Paul asked, hey, what happened to you? And he said, for the first time in my career, I know what students are thinking. Wow. In the past, when he taught the class, when asked a question, one student, two students will answer. And that's all he knew that they knew. But in such an environment, when all students are putting their responses, he got to know, wow, this bunch of students are smart cookies. they know a lot. Right? Now, that was one valuable outcome. Show you another example. Okay, this was for the wind tunnel experiment, and it came about because it was a briefing that the professor had for every lab session. Every time there's a bunch of students come, he will brief them. And you got five badges, you will brief them five times. But by the time the briefing was over, half the lab time was over as well. And so what he did was he came to Paul, and Paul together with him came up with this product, which combines lecture recording with content. The presentation, a short presentation was given before, so that students, before they come to class, they understand the theory. And when they come to the lab, they can do the experiment straight away. So to help them, they did a lecture recording. It was a small place. You can put 140 students in there each time. So together with a video crew, and this is where the technology of video recording was combined, he conducted a tour. Okay, and after the tour, right, he will then do a quiz. And in this quiz, the question was very simple. Wind tunnels take a lot of space. Can you explain why? And in this case, he allowed anonymous response. And what you can see from here is that for one question, he had multiple varied answers. Some answers were good, some were poor, incomplete, some are right, some are wrong, and some are good modern answers. For example, like this one here. Looks pretty good. Very succinct, to the point. Right now. And different students have different answers. Now, what does it all mean? Okay, and this is where I said lambs become super lambs. In fact, I was thinking of maybe lambs should be called elephant. Yeah? What we learn and observe from here is that because it is a participative environment, all students have to participate, submit, and then they can see what other students are saying. They express what they know, and then they share what they think they know. And after they've done that, they compare. Okay? And they're aware of different responses to the same question. And when they do that, they start developing what I call judgment and discernment. Some people call it critical thinking. Okay? I've said A, the answer is A, B, and C, but somebody says A, B, C, D, and E. It's just, wow. Now I know that the answer is better. Now, at the cognitive level, what does it mean? It means that because students are viewing the video, they're also interacting by responses and participating at a group, they are more engaged. They are more active in their learning. That is active participation. Okay, and because they know that what they see will be, what they enter will be seen by other people, they think a lot more. And after they see the answers, they start reflecting, ah, my answer is not that great. Somebody has a better, or look at it differently. There's more self-directed learning, meaning that the students will participate because he has to submit their answer before he can see others. And what he will develop through all these responses that he has, is it can be a bit more discerning. I use the word discerning rather than the usual term like higher order thinking skills, which some of us do not quite understand why it is. I use the word discerning. You can distinguish what is good, what is bad, what is cold, what is hot, what is red, what is blue, what is yellow. And very importantly, he has what I call latent feedback. Now, the number one feedback that we get from students who are doing learning on campus when we have focus group, they said, I want feedback into how I'm learning. And to many professors, when they hear that, feedback means I got to talk to Fedor and said to him, okay, this is what I think about your work. And then I talk to Rasmussen, I talk to Peter, I talk to James. And if you do that, by the time it came to the next person, you'll be burnt out. Okay? But when the students look at the feedback or the inputs by the other students, they are getting latent feedback. Feedback indirectly about how they're learning. Unlike, you know, the assignments that you get, you hand out to the students get it one-to-one, but now, when you, so in a way, you're discussing the responses by the class. As they do so, they are learning. They're getting feedback into how they're learning. And that's one effective way to provide feedback. Feedback by the student for the student. And by so doing, you provide them critical thinking situations implicitly. Now, many of the times we ask ourselves, okay, how can we promote critical thinking? And we think of activities A, B, C, and D. But here, this is something that's quite implicit when the student is well designed. Last but not least, feedback to the professor on how the students are doing. Now, I want to go back to this thing here. Okay? Now, in NTU, classes are huge. Right? So I'm talking to James about how we can get students to do rating for the responses. And the idea here is that good responses, maybe you get 5 stars, you know, the students get a few stars, they'll be floated up to the top, and ratings which are low will float to the bottom. For the students, of course, they want to focus at the top. But for the professor, he wants to focus at the top and the bottom. Those at the top, good co-teachers. Those at the bottom, see me after the class. Yeah? Because it shows that, I mean, they in a way identify where they are weak in. All right? And those in the middle, you don't worry about them. They'll find their own way. All right? So what we have here under such a system, and I'm coming to the end, is that you have these attributes here. Right, attributes in which there's interaction, there's participation, there's collaboration, and there's also self-motivation. But most important attribute is actually it's self-sustainable. This is one tool in which the sustainability is students' participation. In many other tools in which you want to promote learning, the professors kind of fan the fire like hell, right? Because it's hard work. And you want to know what hell is like, you try, you get very hot through all the fanning. But in LEMS environment, it is self-sustainable because it is the students who are actually putting coal into the fire to create the learning environment that is warm and responsive. So take you back to this part here. You have taught them, have they learned? I think LEMS is a good tool that promotes social learning and is able to shift the curve, the typical bell curve, into the extreme left. Now, since we started e-learning, right, we have won many recognitions, but at the end of the day, okay, I think this is very important, right, because when we do this at operational level, it is not how many servers we have, but rather our students. All that we do, it must enhance the student quality and the student learning. Right, and I think LEMS is a good tool, sustainable, deployable, and scalable. They can help us to do that not just for the short term, but for the long term basis. Thank you. Okay, I've also taken the time. Yeah.
How big is the group that
one?
Is that a lecture group?
Oh, yeah.
100, 150%.
Yep. Paul,
You can.
Which is why I suggested the rating system, so that those who are good float to the top, and those who are not so good float to sink to the bottom, and the professor don't have to read all 150 of them. But he will read only the top part and the bottom part.
There's no limit, no limiting.
No, no.
Can be 1,000.
Correct. Paul, you want to talk about the numbers? For that, I think it's a core course.
Yeah, for professors, it was the idea.
Yeah.
To go through the wind tunnel just to a benefit.
Yeah.
They break down the recording.
Yeah.
So the student numbers were anywhere from 150, I guess. But he was willing to look at that because he wanted such an important part of their understanding.
Yes.
Becoming aerospace engineer.
Correct.
He wanted to take the time to
make sure
that he read
the paper. Yeah, so it can be as large as possible. So to help professor manage, the rating system will help. And also because as the students rate, they are passing a judgment and discerning and putting a quality value in that. This is the good answer. This is not a good answer, so 1 star, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, okay, any other, yeah?
When you move it on the side, do you not also moving the failure rate with you? Because, I mean, you're talking about quality of products, but let's, for example, take air conditions. You have air conditions with a lot of energy use. Mm-hmm. So is it level D or level E?
Yeah, right.
So everybody tried to buy the level A, but now they produce level AA or A+. Yes. So if you have it the same in with the students, I mean, also when students improve and getting better, but if as a company, you're still looking for getting the better one, so you still have the failing rate with you.
Yes. Okay. I was asked this question previously. I talked about the raw performance. Okay, I know that some of many institutions, they score based on the curve. Right, so some people must fail. Okay, but talking about raw scores. Okay, in fact, talking about that, I think, again, studies have shown that today, during my time, for the whole school, you have maybe two or three students with four A's. Today, you can have one class with four A's. Okay? So I'm talking about a raw score. Okay? And that curve is possible because, as an example, if you've got lecture recording, the weak student can learn, can relearn, can review and review again and again until he understands. Before that facility, basically, if he missed the point, he missed the point, and if he has no friends, he's dead. Right? Asking questions on the forum. Today, he may be shy to ask questions, but with a forum, he dares to ask questions. In fact, today, a lot of students are very participative behind a keyboard. Right? So these opportunities are there for them to reach out and to articulate and to review. Right? So like I said, as the technology matures and if students use it appropriately, yeah, and there are a lot of ifs in the class, performance will have a better, high probability of improving their performance. Okay? Okay. Thank you very much.